some dollars. You didn't have to use the one horse in the third race because it's a horse where the it's a horse where nobody in there can touch him. If he just runs the last race that he ran, nobody's going to be close to him. You've got to be able to determine that. Some guy was up there trying to tell me, yeah, but this son, such a horse, he said, this horse was, he had won his race first time out. He said, these horses here, you know, they've been running against better. They haven't run against nothing. They've won one race in their lifetime. They had been running against, yeah, running in the races. And they were trying to tell me, you know, you should have used this. I said, they said, what, you got the triple going, have me? I said, yep, one horse. I said, should have used this one, you know. So that's okay. So the horse skips home. You know, he just skips along. The rest of them back there struggling, trying to get place, money, and show money.
The bounce.
It's when a horse has had a long layoff, comes out and wins his first time out. Or comes out and runs second by a half, second by a neck, second by a head. Tries to win the race. Tries hard to win the race. He'll bounce the next time out. That's been written about in many times in the follow-up. And then Brohammer is something Brohammer put me on to some years ago. And it the next time out, this horse will run back to the way he ran before he bounced. Most of the time he'll run, and he'll get long odds. It's amazing. It's amazing, his odds. You want to look, that's the art of handicapping. You're looking for something different. You know, hey, this horse ran in this. Another thing you want to think about, if somebody claimed a horse out of a race with some horses that beat him, why does he send him back with those horses? You know, that's something to think about. Why does he send him back with him? He's going to try to beat him. So you look down, two pace lines down, and you say, this horse here, hey, he won this kind of race before. So you use that pace line. You can't take the last race and use all of them from the last race and expect something to happen. It won't happen. Because it will predict it's going to happen almost identically to the same way they did before. If a horse finished up close or won the race. Now, but sometimes, I'll tell you something about some of these programs will pick it up. If the horse was making the right kind of move in the race, it'll pick it up that he's going to beat them today, and he's used at better odds. He'll be 8-1, 9-1, sometimes 10-1. And these programs pick it up. That thermation will pick him up. It'll pick him up. But if he finished 4 3/4 length back, it's going to be hard for him to pick that up, especially when you've got six horses, and all six of them belong in the computer. Because all six of these horses have been running well. Now, if only four of them have been running well, that's a whole different ball game. But you got a race where all six horses have been running well. When you get into small fields, you'll find many times that if you've got a five-horse field, five horses in there can run. Or either only two can run, and you're not going to get anything for them. You're going to get 360. You're going to have two dead favorites in there, and you're not going to get any money out of it. You get a field where there's five horses and all five of them can run pretty well. You look at it and you know what you're doing, you can get to win them. He pays $9, $7.80. But these are the things you have to do yourself. You have to learn yourself. You have to learn how to use the racing form for it to be so it'll be advantageous to you. Because the racing form has all the data that you need. And then what computer program you use comes next. And that depends on which program you think fits your personality. Which do you like to use? You know, and that comes with. I've used them all, and most of them I did quite well with them. Some of them I liked really well, but Howard told me I couldn't use them anymore. So I had to do what Howard said. I've had a habit of doing what Howard said. I think that's one reason why I've been successful in this business. I just always did what he told me. I don't work for Howard. You know, I'm not salaried or anything. So I'm not working for him. You know, when you work for a person and you hire out, you got to do what they tell you. But I do what Howard tells because when I go to the racetrack, I get my payday. That's the way that is. I better get it there. Otherwise, I'm lost. But So if you will take into consideration the racing form, if you don't know how to read the racing form, take that sheet out of there that the people that do the racing form, and sit down and study it. Study that so that you learn how to analyze what they're talking about in the form. Because it's going to give you the information you need. And many times, if you know how to use it, you can do the matchup. Some of you don't know what I'm talking about. How about the matchup, dude? Well, I'll let Bradshaw. Bradshaw is going to, he'll get into that matchup. That is, I'll tell you, that's dynamite. You learn how to do the matchup, you're on your way. You're going to make some money to try. That's what you're in this business for. You're not like just going out there just to lose some money, you know. You'd be heartbroken when you come home so you can get drunk. You know, it's a whole different ball game. I can't help you. You're into that, you know. But if you want to make some money, then it's different. I was talking to one of my sons the other day, and he was telling me, you know, and my son, he's been hanging around the racetrack for years, a little bit. You know, he goes, periodically he would go with me, but he never wanted to study. He says, just too much stuff to study to be a pro at it. So he's really an amateur at it. But he told me something. He says, you know, Dad, he says, you know, this racing, it changes periodically. He says, I noticed that. He says, it changes. He says, I notice you be ready to change each time it changes. And that's what you have to be. You have to be ready to change. You know, if they're running early today and you get out there tomorrow and they're running a little bit different, you got to be able to change with that. You got to make those changes. If they were running 12-horse fields 10 years ago and they're running 5 and 6 horse fields today, you got to be able to change with that. Many times I find that I can't go to the races. All the fields are so short and the prices are going to be so short, so I can't go. You have to be able to make those kind of changes. And some guys tell me, well, why don't you go? You know, you should be at the track. I see you out there winning, you know. I said, I don't need to be out there every day. I don't see how you do it. I said, well, they don't, you know, there's no law that says I have to go out there. They're not going to arrest me and jail me. So I was not out there. So that's so well, so good, you know. But these are the kind of things you have to learn on your own to do yourself, to be in charge of yourself, to take charge of yourself. You got to do that, to have confidence in self. Don't be around crying when you lose a race. Won't help none to send them long prayers. Yeah, you know, you've got no deal. You know, you said them long prayers, they don't mean nothing. Have you ever heard some of them black people pray? If you listen to some of those, you figure out they don't used to be saying a word, because God ain't got time for nobody else. So you know, used to be being down there sitting up there saying a lot of prayers. You got to get down to the itty gritty. You got to get out and get the work done before you go to the race. You know, this is a business. Horse racing, if you're going to be in it, it's a real business. You have to treat it like a business. You got to figure out how much money you're going to have in your bankroll. How are you going to use that money at the track? Can't be buying shots of liquor out of your bankroll, you know, and getting drunk, standing up at the bar. Can't do that. This money is especially, you're going to the track to make money. You can get drunk as you want to tonight if you're not going tomorrow. I wouldn't advise you going out tomorrow to be drunk tonight. You better stay sober, because I tell you, in this business, you better be sober, because these horses will take you to the cleaners. They will. If you don't keep your sober mind about what you're doing, these horses will clean you out. I know guys have lost everything they ever owned, including their wife.
Oh, I'd like to do that. How do you do that?
You don't want that to happen. You know, if you lose your wife, you're in bad shape sometimes, especially when you get past 35 years old. You better keep her, I'm telling you. You know, but really, you got to be sober-minded. You got to know what you're doing. Otherwise, they just take you to the cleaners. And if you're out there listening, some of them idiots are standing around out at the racetrack, I feel sorry for it. You look at those guys. Some of them got shoes on with no soles on them. Really, I mean, God's got a cardboard down in there and tape on that shoe, you know. You don't want to be like that. You know, at least you want to present yourself in them and say, well, and don't, whatever you do, don't talk to them. If you talk to them, you've had it. Because those guys have got all kind of excuses why they don't win races. They'll tell you that the track is just not going to let you win. I was out there before Christmas, and a guy told me, he said, they're getting that Christmas money now. I'll let you win no races. And I said, what? Yeah, they're getting that Christmas money. They're taking it all. And that Chris McCarron, he's going right along with him. He had the best one. I saw him all stiff in that horse. See, you can't listen to those kind of people. I said, oh, I didn't know that. They think if you win, you're just plain lucky, you know. They used to call me at Del Mar, call me Lucky. Yeah, I walk in there, hi, Lucky. You know, hi. Lucky just because you know what you're doing and know how to do it. You know how to perform at the track. You know how to perform away from the track. You know what you got to do when you're not there. And that's what counts. I'm going to be here with you all the weekend. Any of you have any problems? Anything you want to talk about? I know a lot about this horse race. Now, I'll talk with you about it. Believe me, I know a lot about it. I've been at this a long time. And I make a comfortable living at it. If you want to talk about it, if you want to call me on the telephone, people call me and talk to me. I'm always willing to talk to you. I'm always willing to help anybody in this methodology that I can. I promised Howard that some years ago, and I'm keeping my promise. So I'm going to be talking to you over the weekend about some more very important things. Until then, adios.
Before we take a break, I want to ask you all a question. How many of you know, at your track or tracks, by distance, what is an average winning third fraction? Good for you. Anybody else? How many of you, well, if you don't know that one, this is going to be tougher. How many of you know, by distance at your track, what is a fast third fraction? Same guy, I bet. By the same token, how many of you know by distance at your track what is a slow third fraction? Well, we got more of a no slow than no fast, but we didn't get very many hands. Folks, the first thing I taught my son is this. In the morning, wherever you, in the bathroom or kitchen or where you're reading in bed, you should be able to look at the results charts and see what the third fraction the day before ran, fast, slow, or average. Then you'll know whether early or late is winning. Now, Tom Hamilton knows. Tom Hamilton can tell you the tracks he plays most consistently to the second, fifth of a second, tenth of a second if he had to. What constitutes a fast third fraction by distance, a slow one, and an average one? Now, for God's sake, if you want to win at the races, you've got to know things like this, folks. Your curiosity, your natural curiosity should say is, I don't want to run these things through the computer. I don't want to know what the percentage median was. I should just know that if they're running slow third fractions, they're obviously winning with fast second calls. Does that make sense? If they're winning with slow third fractions, they're obviously running faster second calls. Does that make sense? And if they're winning average, then you know there's no bias. It's just kind of an average, the best horse is going to win. Tom Hamilton can tell you those numbers like that, and so can the other ones, but he makes a science of it. Folks, that is so easy. Find out that anything under 25 is fast maybe at your track. Anything over 26 is slow. Anything between 25 and 26 is average. I'm making up those figures, but that will apply to quite a few tracks. Know that! That's at 6 furlongs, I'll get it for all the other distances. Know that, and you've kept a profile. You don't have to go through all this business of getting a Lotus 1-2-3 program and doing all that. All you need to do is make that simple maneuver. Now, if you haven't got any more advice, if you all dropped dead now or you suddenly lost your hearing and you were able to do that, you would increase your win percentage, Tom, by how much? Good 10%. That means two more wins in 20 races. Just by knowing that. You say, wait a minute, those horses were running 24 and 4 yesterday. It's a closer situation. And you're not going to be playing these early speed horses. Just as simple as that. And then you see, oh, hey, they're running real slow third fractions. You don't have to do all the other fractions. If they're running slow third fractions, they're running fast second calls. It's as simple as that. Now, we've all heard the mysterious matchup and everything. After we take a break, I want to bring him on. But before we take the break, I want to tell you what happened in his life. How many of you have ever bought any of those videotapes from Expo 90? Good. Well, they weren't worth it anyway, so don't feel badly. But Jimmy Bradshaw's wife, Leroy, got a hold of one of those tapes. Now, Jimmy's up there, you know, the Oklahoma macho. He doesn't think his wife, they got that thing keeping barefoot and home and everything. He gets up on that tape and he says, I don't bet big bets. I own $50 of bets because, you see, when you live in Oklahoma and you're married, you don't need much money. When she heard that tape, I'm down there and I'm listening to this. They're discussing something. New floor covering, new couch, new chair, new carpeting. Don't you ever dare say, Jimmy, what's she called? Jimmy Ray or Jimmy Bob? Jimmy Bob. Hey, Jimmy Bob, don't you ever tell any people out there that you live in Oklahoma and you're married, you don't need much money. I'm going to show you. So since then, Jimmy's life has changed. And he will tell you about some of those changes, as well as go into how he became a winner from a absolutely, totally the worst handicapper in the world, became one of the best. But first, let's all take about a 15-minute break. Robert Enfield is a crass, pushy guy, and I've warned everybody, if you're going to ask for his help, you better damn well be able to take some abuse, because Enfield won't fool around. Just to give you an example of what Enfield does in that 15-minute break, he went to the jack... What table did you go to, Bob? Went to the blackjack table, put down $50, came back with $600. Well, everybody else was smoking a cigarette, he made $550. No. So that's the kind of guy that you'll be teaching you in Florida. We love him, but I know that he has offended a lot of people down there. They say, well, he treats us mean. He won't handle us with kid gloves. If you want kid gloves, don't go with Enfield. Okay, folks, let's reassemble here. A lot of you have asked me, we forgot is we are not a very good merchandising organization. I should take some lessons from Dick Mitchell or something. We have 39 people here who are not clients, and we did not bring, my dear wife, we did not bring any inquiry package. We have an inquiry package which invites you not to join us. It tells you all the things that are wrong with joining us, and we're going to make you work, and you've got to be serious, and we don't want you if you're going to be a dilettante. It's one of those negative type of advertising things. And, the bottom line is, to become a client, you have to buy the basic material, which consists of three manuals. One is the Dynamics of Incremental Velocity and Energy Exertion Manual, which is an overview of the entire methodology. The other is the Phase 3 Basic Velocity Manual. And the third one is a manual that shows you the formulas and how to do it by hand, how to figure feet per second in case your computer breaks down or you get stranded on a desert island. And to become a member, you get those three manuals, and it costs $54. So if you want the key to the mint, the first charge is $54. After that, it's entirely up to you. You can stop there, or you can go into computer programs. Computer programs range anywhere from 50 to on up. You can get the Brohammer Simple Phase 2 computer program for $49. It's worth every penny of it. Actually, see, what it's got the stuff that Brohammer put in his book that we wouldn't let him tell some of the real stuff, but it's pretty good. But you have to be able to have read his book to use it, that's all. And then the Phase 1, the best Phase 1 program is $99. The IBM compatible, and the lesser ones that fit the handheld computers, I think, are like $49. Synergism 2 is $189. Synergetic Matchup 2 is about the same price as Synergism. And you get on up. Talk to my wife for prices. Well, there's your basic thing. So if you want to become a client, it's $54. And you get those three manuals and a membership. And we're on your tail for the rest of your life if you don't win. And you get free follow-up service. I didn't mean to take up this time with that, but I didn't realize we had so many new people who didn't know that. If you let my wife know, she'll send you a free inquiry package, which has a lot of stuff about how great we are. There's a lot of stuff other people have written about us. It makes me cry to read it every time. God, how can we be that good? And some of those people wrote all those great things about it, they regret it now because they've created a Frankenstein. How many of you, and I don't expect the new people to answer this question, but how many of you who have been with us for a while appreciate the value of the pace of the race, pace of the horse? Good. I'm looking at the faces of winners. Some people say, we always ask when we have a long shot that wins, how did the public let that horse go off at that price? And mostly our people know the answer. You have to do the little rehearsal here. Whenever you see a long winner, a horse winning double-digit figures, first thing you want to say to yourself is, how did the public let that horse go off and pay that kind of money? Okay, now just from your experience, this anybody can answer this, whether you're experienced with us or just experienced. Chuck, how you doing? Why, what makes long shots? Anybody? We've got a guy who's pretty smart. Do long shots win because they're long shots, or do they win because the public made them long shots? Right. What does the public look for in making a horse a low-priced favorite, second favorite, third? What's the primary thing they look for? And the money finish. Who said that? Go to the head of the class. What else do they look for? Recency. Class drop. You got it. And where do they draw the line at beaten lengths? Different rules, but they all have 2 3/4, 3 1/4, 3 1/2, 4 lengths. Seldom 5 lengths. I saw one expert say it's 5 lengths. I want to ask you a question now. If a horse runs against a pace of the race of 108 and he's beaten 12 lengths, what does that horse in round figures run it in? How much? I'm going to accept your answer because I can't figure that fast. 101 and what? 110 and 3? 109 and 3. That's 8 lengths, right? If you've beaten 12 lengths, it'd be 110 and what's something or other? 2. Okay. Here's a horse beating all the lengths. Let's say his time would have been 110 and 2 because he's beaten 12 lengths. And you've got the horse that's the favorite? He ran at 110 and 3. And he's the favorite. And this horse is going off at 20 to 1. I can do that. There's where your long shots come from. It's how fast the horse, the pace that the horse runs against. Not how many lengths he was beaten. It's the pace of the race he ran against. It's the matchup that horse was involved in. A horse may win. You say, well, gee whiz, he came in first at 111, 2 lengths off of the second call and won it. And the next race, he's 7 lengths off. But you don't bother to look to see that the second call was 44 and 3. You say, well, the horse is going out of form, so I won't bet him. When I say you, I'm being rhetorical. I'm talking about the public. This is the matchup. What fractions can a horse run well against? What fractions can he not run well against? It's the pace of the race and the pace of the horse. Now, this is on all of our advanced. And look, you'll see a horse beaten 9 lengths. When you look at that pace of the race, pace of the horse program, he's got better numbers than the winner who went wire to wire. And most people won't look at that screen because they're too damn lazy. And that is the key to winning at this. And the man who learned his handicapping, learned his matchup from the pace of the race, the pace of the horse, the man who said to me, well, how come I can't win? I said, what do you do for a living? I'm a track coach, and I look at him. I'll let him tell the story. Folks, Jim the Hat Bradshaw.
You get your own private money.
That must be your wife.
Make your wife feel real proud to hear all that applause you get when you walk up. Come. She thought you'd never amount to nothing.
Ah, she knew it would. Now, Howard is absolutely correct. How many of you, before you got into the method, before you started learning how to handicap horses, went to the track, came back losing every day? Good. You're honest. None of you were as bad as I was. I was awful. I was the worst horse player in the country. In fact, I was lucky to know which of the horses parked across the finish line first. But you know, I knew that it could be done. I didn't know how, but I'd see people standing in line and cashing tickets. After every race. And I'd hear people jump up and holler. I didn't know that maybe they had a $2 show. But that's a heck of a lot more than I had. I did everything to try to win at playing the horses. Because I loved horse racing. Didn't care too much for the horses, but, you know, I loved the excitement of watching them run. I've been going to horse races since I was a little kid. My dad used to take me. We'd watch the cowboys have match races. And they'd say, "My horse faster than your horse." Now, put up or shut up. And we've seen them go home without their saddles, without their bridles, and without their horses. Maybe some of them even went home without their wives. But there was always a winner. And I knew that it could be done. But I couldn't do it. And I met Howard Sarton. And he's telling me that me, of all people, should be able to win at horse racing. I looked at him kind of funny, and I said, "Now, that man don't know me. You know, how can he say that I, of all people?" He said, "You're a track coach." And, you know, a lot of things are running through my mind, like, well, what the heck difference does that make? You're a psychologist. He said, "Horses are like people." I said, "Yeah, heck of a lot dumber." But he said, "They are predictable." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "They're like human runners." They have a behavioral pattern. And they follow this behavioral pattern. And the wheels started turning. Because I knew pace. And I knew runners. I had trained 6 state championship cross-country teams in Oklahoma. 2 track state championship teams. I knew pace. I knew how to teach it. I'd never applied it to horses. And this one statement that Howard said to me woke me up.
I said, if they are predictable, then I can win with horses. So I started looking at horses with a different approach. I knew that final times was not the answer. I knew that from my track coaching. I knew that track runners, some ran well on the pace, some off the pace. Some ran well in the lead, and if they didn't get the lead, they couldn't win. They'll say, I'll be darned. If this ain't so about horses also. So I started matching horses. There's slow horses and there's fast horses. Horses that run against slow paces do well. Horses that run against fast paces do well. So you want to find out the pace that the horse does the best against. Some horses are just pack runners. You know, they'll run good against a fast pace and they'll run good against a slow pace. But just good enough to get their bucket of oats. That's all they want. They don't care anything about winning. Horses that like to win are horses that you want to look for. That try to win, every time they run, they're trying, are horses that you need to look for. I like to tell the story of the slow horses. Get rid of slow horses. People say, well, what are slow? Slow horses are horses that are slow against today's pace. Now, you've got horses that run 22:45 against a pace of 22:45, 1:10. 23:47, 1:14s are slow horses. You know, and I'm not going to give those horses a lot of credit. Say, well, wait, you know, adjust them. Yeah, adjust them. Adjust them out of the race. I've got a friend lives here in, well, a couple of them lives here in Las Vegas. And this one walked up to Frank the other day and he looked at Frank. He said, Frank, who have you got in this race? It's one of the East Coast tracks. He said, well, I've got this two horse. He said, well, what did you do about that four horse? He said, well, I threw him out. He said, why? He said, he's too fast. Jim looked at Frank a little bit, and Frank said, yeah, I threw him out. So they ran the race. The old four horse goes, zoom, wins the race. Frank, Jim said, yeah, Frank, you was right. He said, he's too fast. I said, Frank, why'd you do that? He said, well, I got mixed up. He said, I thought you said throw out fast horses. I said, no, Frank, fast horses win races. I said, it's slow horses that don't win races. He said, yeah, but all these other horses were slow. And you said slow horses win races against slow horses. Well, you know, I'm kind of lost with that kind of reasoning. Because I think that's what I probably did say. You know, slow horses win races against slow horses. But I said, yeah, but Frank, now listen, let's don't throw out the fast horses. Because those fast horses are going to beat those slow horses. He said, okay, he said, I won't make that mistake again. But now this is the same guy that 2 years ago, I gave him a race to bet, winning parlay. I said, now go bet these horses for us. He's my gopher. I said, you go bet these horses for us. Gave him the numbers. Win parlay. So he goes up and he bets them. Man, we got two of them in. It's a straight parlay. We got two of them in. I say, man, we got this hit because I know that last horse is going to hit. He said, what number we got? Well, you know, they got these stupid Las Vegas numbers. I got to look. I said, I think we got 5310. He said, well, that's not what I got. I said, well, what do you got? He said, well, I got a 89-something. Well, hey, listen, that's not who we're supposed to have. I said, that's not a right number. You go up and tell them and they'll change it. I knew they probably wouldn't, but maybe we could at least get our money back. So he comes back and he said, no, they said that that's a good number. It can't be a good number. He said, well, it's a dog running in the fifth race tonight. You know, I've been here in Las Vegas for 3 days. I got here Wednesday. And, I've been doing a matchup. I do the matchup, and this is the way I handicap. My wife has started going to the track with me. And she likes to put them into the computer. I pick the pace lines, pick the contenders, and she puts them into the computer. And we've been going to the track at Remington, Oaklawn, Churchill, wherever. And when we come to Vegas, she won't bring the computer. She said, I can be the computer. And yesterday I played 7 tracks simultaneously. Now, you don't believe that. You asked her, she's sitting right back there. All the mutual clerks and the ticket cashers know who she is. They call her Boomer Sooner because she's coming up there cashing all the tickets. I can't teach you to do this. But I can teach you to handicap. And I'll tell you, don't try to do what I do. But listen to some of the things that I say. Because I do know what a horse race is. Now, some of these numbers I don't know. I made some bad mistakes today. I mean, I really get confused. The computer in my head, the wires gets crossed. Very easy. You know, I have complete blackouts. Least little thing can throw me off because everything I do is completely mental. It's quite a challenge. They'll switch a TV on me and it just blows my mind out.
you know, I can't find my TV. Because I don't know which track I'm playing. I've got my racing forms lined up with the TVs, and if they switch them, then I don't know what to do. And the worst trouble is playing Belmont Park in the rain. Because they've got about six or seven turf races, and they start scratching them, and I don't know who's in and who's out. And then trying to figure out what numbers match these saddlecloth numbers. It's quite a chore. And I have never told anyone, hey, don't use a computer. That's why Howard and I worked so hard on the development of the Remation. Not to make things complicated, but to make things easier. To uncomplicate to do the matchup for you. Like I said, it's one of the greatest breakthroughs in horse racing in 80 years. I'm not bragging. It's good. But you know what's wrong with a computer program? Any computer program, you got to put pace lines in. How many have trouble finding pace lines? Okay. How many have trouble finding contenders? Okay? Now, these are two things that you've got to be able to do. These are two things that you've got to learn to do. Hey, you can learn to do APV, you can learn to make profiles, you can learn all of this. But if you can't learn these two things, you're going to have trouble winning with the horses. With or without a computer, these are two things that you must be able to do. And especially with a computer program, you've got to be able to put pace lines in. These are two things that you need to dedicate yourself on. Finding the true contenders in a horse race. What are true contenders? Horses that can win at today's race. Well, you know, I don't know. There's 10 horses in the, all 10 of them can win. Uh-uh. There's lots of tools that we have that have been developed to help you find the contenders. People have many guidelines to find contenders. But put these horses into the computer. Find out which ones have the chance to win today's race. You know, don't put in a slow horse unless you're willing to bet on that slow horse. Don't throw out the fast horse as Frank did. Because the fast horse may win today's race. Say, well, his last race was the best that he ever ran. He may not repeat it. Yeah, and he may. You know.
I've never told anyone not to bet two horses. That's the methodology. I bet one horse. Yeah, what do you do if your second horse wins? That's a decision I've made. That's a decision I've made. If my second horse wins, to heck with it. I've made a decision. And I'm going to live with it, right or wrong. Because I know before the day's over, I'm going to hit over 60%. Regardless, I know what I'm going to hit. Now, how do you come from not being able to win to the point of where you can win? Knowing who has a chance to win today's race.